45-50% chance of resulting in a calf 30 days later from that very first heat, the second ovulation. But then you get that out of the way, and she has another normal estrous cycle. You're getting up there to where we ought to be. You know, all things being equal, 80% natural service cover, 70-75% with AI, depending on how we do it. And so really, you know, understanding the hormones that control that's important, but the most simple way to say it is we need these heifers to cycle a few times before we put the bull in with them, right? Or before we time AI them the first time. And that leads us, knowing that endocrinology, knowing the hormones that regulate that the start of puberty or the attainment of puberty, helps us to use some technologies that can give us a little competitive advantage in getting that done. So just it's not the most complicated thing in the world, but it's important to understand that we need to have those heifers cycling a few times before we want to try to get them bred that first season. That'll let us get them bred early. Nutritional development, other than not being a geneticist, Lawton makes me have to admit from time to time that I'm not a nutritionist either, but as a, you know, we all try to act like it sometimes. But with nutritional development of heifers, for a long time we've talked about we need to get them to that 65% of their mature body weight, 65 to 70% to get them to do what I just talked about, to start cycles, to go through puberty in advance of that first breeding season. And there was different ways we've talked about for a long time that we can get them there, depending on when your calves are born, when they're weaned relative to forage availability or feed, you know, supplemental feed availability. We can grow them fast and hold them. We can kind of grow them along just a little bit, hold them back, and then flush them up or ramp them up toward the breeding season, or we can just slow and steady grow them until we get there if those concerns aren't, you know, if that's not a big concern. So, you know, if part of that, the middle of this developmental period, or this part of the developmental period from weaning to first breeding season is going through the winter, then maybe you slow grow them for a little while, just making sure they don't back up at any point. That is one thing that we know. We don't want them to lose a bunch of weight during that period. And then the other concern up here is just not getting them too fat, displaced milk production, and all those classical old things that we've talked about with heifer development. But some of the newer concepts with that target weight deal and it being kind of a moving target are that we know that we've done a really good job, actually, of advancing the age of puberty in a lot of the breeds that we deal with. So in my mind, and this is supported by some science and literature, that we've selected for scrotal circumference on yearling bulls for so long, and we've done that, stacked it from generation to generation, that larger scrotal circumference at yearling indicates earlier sexually maturing bull, and that's fairly highly heritable. That's passed on to his heifer offspring, so they're earlier maturing. They go through puberty earlier just like their sire did, and we've done that so long with so many generations. We've gotten to the point where in purebred and commercial cattle production, we have heifers cycling sooner than they used to. You know, breed a lot of heifers every year, and it used to, when I first started that, you know, 15 years ago, didn't find a lot of bred heifers at 14, 15 months old when you're AI'ing them first time. But anymore, it's not uncommon to find a handful of bred heifers every year that would be 14 months old that are 7 months bred when you go to AI them. And so it indicates that we backed them up far enough that they're getting bred before they even get weaned by bull calf, you know, calf crop mates, or the herd sire if he's still out there, and those kinds of things. So a different kind of management. So to take advantage of that, a lot of this work that's done by these folks that are listed down here, Rick Funston is one that has done a good job of getting out and talking about it a lot. But developing these heifers to a lower target weight and still getting good results on that first breeding season. So these are some of the early work that they released on this, developing to 53 and 58% instead of that 65% that we've talked about for so long, looking at the pregnancy rates in a defined breeding season to that, and seeing that there wasn't a change relative to the normal way of producing. Travis Mullenix is on the animal science faculty there at the University of Tennessee. We worked together on some of these concepts of kind of limited development. Before he got to UT, he was doing some work on extensive versus intensive heifer development, kind of range type development of these heifers, slower growing, not as aggressive nutritional management. And so you see some results here, feedlot versus range development. and the body weight on those. And then if you take it on further and look at the pregnancy rates, you see that with that flushing effect that they get, even with those slower growing cattle in the range environment, if they ramp them up pretty quick, getting toward right at the start of the breeding season, they still get a good pregnancy rate. Now, I do work with Travis on looking at calving distribution within that, and some of the things that I want to get more pinpointed. So I don't think this, I talk about this right now because it's, you'll see it in the popular press, see it in the literature. I definitely don't want you to think that I'm telling everybody to go out here and limit, develop your heifers, because I don't think we're to that point right now of being able to do that. But if you have an opportunity and you can manage tightly enough, maybe that's something to take advantage of. But with the concept of longevity, what we really want to talk about in this little session here is developing heifers to stay in the herd so we don't lose all that time and financial investment that I talked about earlier. They followed these on out for 5 years and saw that the range-developed heifers actually stayed a higher percentage were in the, still in the herd at 4 and 5 years out, actually at 2, 3, and 4, 5 years out. So, and they go on in that paper to talk about some kind of postulate on some reasons why that might be, making them more feed efficient, less visceral weight, and all those kinds of things. But really, that's what it all comes down to on the longevity. Now, one thing that we concern ourselves with in different environments, like we operate in Tennessee in the Mid-South, would be similar to where we are right now here in North Georgia or in Central Georgia. It's not the same kind of environment where a lot of that work was done in New Mexico and Nebraska and those areas. So we want to make sure that, you know, we're not just reading something in the popular press that was done on the other side of the country and trying it here. Or telling folks to try it here. So since Travis came on to our faculty several years ago, started doing some of that limited winter development of these spring breeding heifers, and just incidentally, we had some warm season native grasses that he did this on, wintering them through the winter with just the only additional supplement they got was half a pound of distiller's grains 3 times a week or a quarter pound of blood and fish meal 3 times a week. Very, very limited supplemental feed, and looking at how they performed body weight wise and got them to a lower percent body weight of what we expected them to be as mature cows. AI pregnancy rates has not differed over the 4, now 5 years of that study. And then the overall pregnancy rate at the end of a 60-day breeding season has not been affected by that. Now, the data we don't have on this just yet is the longevity of those heifers. And I do have some concern. This is why I'm very hesitant in telling you to go out and try this if you're from the southeast or the east at all, because we may not be seeing the same kind of longevity out of those heifers. But think about that. You'll see a lot of that's in the new talk about heifer development, about maybe being able to save some money and not feed them as hard as we used to. But for right now, I wouldn't drastically change maybe the way you're doing it to get these heifers bred as early as you can in that first breeding season. I threw this in here, some more of Rick's work out of Nebraska, just because I was up in Calhoun Tuesday night and talking with a group of producers up there and prior to their herd sale on Wednesday, and had a question come up in discussion about how does fetal programming come into this, another kind of catchphrase that's been out there for several years now and things that we need to be concerned about. And really the way that discussion came up was thinking about cows that went through these really severe drought periods. So we had a very severe drought here this past fall, here in this area on up into the eastern part of Tennessee and through Kentucky. And there were some fall calving cows that went through some pretty severe limited nutrition environment in the last 3 months of the pregnancies. And so we need to watch those heifers. We know that in years past, in 2012, 10, 7, I was working in Mississippi in some of that time and in Tennessee part of that time, a lot of cattle coming back and forth from Texas when they would have a bad drought and we might have some grass, we'd have a drought and they'd have grass. So just kind of trading cattle around. And we see now the heifers out of that just anecdotally saying that they don't perform as well when those cows that gave birth to those heifers went through pretty limited nutrition through the last part of that pregnancy because of a drought situation. And Rick's fetal programming type work and beyond that, a lot of other folks have worked on that, including some in Tennessee, would kind of go along with that as well. So when you're talking about selection of heifers for reproductive performance, it's not just at weaning. It's not just pre-weaning, but there's effects that happen when they're in utero that can affect how they breed the first time and how they breed the second time. So think about that all the way back. Again, it's a long game. It's not just any one point of time we have to think about. I'm going to scoot through these pretty quick because I think Lawton, we're probably getting close on my time, aren't we? But reproductive selection, calving ease, besides the genetic parts that we've talked about, we have the tool of the pelvic measure that may or may not be useful to you depending on how you procure your heifers. If they're bald, you may not need that necessarily if you know something about their history. But reproductive tract score about a month prior to the breeding season, going in there and just palpating the tract, maybe using an ultrasound. And some of you may get as advanced as antral follicle counts, and that's a kind of a newer way to track how early these heifers are going to go through puberty, how sexually mature they are at that first breeding season. We can go in there with this technology and rate how mature they are, weed out the immature ones, and really do a good job of getting these the heifers that we end up keeping bred early because of that. So something that you can use. Another technology that I like to think about for using in breeding heifers early, and this actually goes on into getting the first calf heifers bred early too, and cows in general, and keeping a tight calf crop, is using estrus synchronization along with AI or natural service. If you take advantage of the genetics that you can get through artificial insemination, I think that's extremely important. But we've identified now, and you'll hear folks like Cliff Lamb, Dave Patterson, those guys talk about this quite a bit, that not necessarily just the genetics that come from artificial insemination, that may not be even the best part of it these days, as much of a positive impact comes from the estrus synchronization application of progestogen, of a progestogen, whether it's progesterone through a cedar or fed MGA. That exposure for that synchronization time gives them that short cycle, right? You think back to the endocrinology, the hormones I talked about that control when they go through puberty. If we artificially give them that short cycle, if some of them hadn't started cycling yet, we put a cedar in them for 7 days, feed them NGA for 14 days, put a cedar in them for 14 days, whatever protocol you use, that helps them, some of them that are shallow in estrus that haven't gotten through that short cycle yet, have that short cycle, and then the next cycle they have is going to be a little closer to normal. They'll breed earlier because we do that. So a very important managing heifers for longevity with the concept of getting them bred early to calve early the first time, including a progesterone of some sort of progestogen, either cedar or NGA, prior to that first breeding season. I think pregnancy detection, extremely important. A lot of good technology for that these days, blood pregnancy test, ultrasound, tried and true, hand palp and all that stuff, especially with heifer management for salvage value. If we can identify these heifers as soon as 30 days after the end of the breeding season, and now we can sell them as heavy feeders, there's still some pretty decent value in heavy feeders. But if we carry them through and don't know they're pregnant, they don't calve, and we sell them as a basically a killing cow, then we've gone from maybe $1.20 to 65 cents of salvage value, and we put extra feed in or carrying at times. So I think pregnancy detection, as with all cows on your place, it's extremely important in heifers for managing that salvage value that we can get with them. Again, just to reiterate that once we confirm them pregnant the first time, we're not done. There's a lot of things we need to do to ensure that they calve right and breed back early. And a lot of that would be, and this hasn't changed yet. Some of the concepts of target weight may be changing, but this part of it hasn't. We still need those heifers to calve in good shape the first time. We like to do it in a body condition score 6, give them a little extra, help them calve if they need to, because one of those things that changes the first postpartum interval that can lengthen it is difficulty calving. So get to them and help them if they need to, but get them to calve in the right condition. You see, all kind of back to all these things, we can manage several of these factors through heifer selection and heifer development that impact that first postpartum interval to make it short enough that we get her rebred to have another calf about the same time next year and have that good opportunity to stay back in the herd. So, again, these technologies, besides what I said about MGA and cedars, using kind of an older thing that have done in the past, if they've got big enough follicles, we can give them an injection of GnRH and get that short cycle out of the way that way as well. But understanding the hormones that control when they come through puberty and giving them a little advantage if they need it, especially if you're going to use the limited kind of approach to nutritional development, you might really want to pay close attention to this kind of technology and use that to make sure that we get the longevity out of those heifers that really justifies the time and the financial investment that we had wrapped up in those. So I'll go back and just reiterate some of the things that were really, I think, well explained earlier. Todd did a great job setting the stage for all this and all this discussion, and I fully agree that while reproductive performance is not highly heritable, I always say that while fertility is not highly heritable, infertility is. And that probably doesn't sit well with, you know, real geneticists, I guess, but that's kind of the way we think about it. If you cull open cows, if you cull open heifers, you get the kind of heifers and cows that you need. Pregnancy, to me, is the most important phenotype to select for in heifers, but all this stuff we've talked about make sure that they can get to that phenotype. Using an optimum heterosis, this, again, it just reiterates what Todd said, trying to keep that, and I took this from Dr. Kirkpatrick. He's our quantitative geneticist, extension specialist at UT, and talk about the advantage of maternal heterosis, 2 pounds of calf wean per cow exposed, and how important that is. Todd mentioned it as well. If we can start with that on the heifers and take this kind of systems approach to doing that, and if you look at what we deal with smaller herds in the Mid-South, you know, in Tennessee, our average herd size is going to be 25 or 30 cows. It's hard to keep optimum heterosis for pounds of calf wean per cow exposed if you're retaining your own heifers. On the flip side of that, we don't have a very strong availability of F1 bred replacement females. And those are some things we try to work on and looking at different components and niches within our production system that might be able to provide more of those if the market demands it, and show the value of that to the market and try to go with that and do things like maybe you do go with the terminal cross, sell all your feeder calves, buy back a maternal F1 female that was raised by somebody else that does that for a living. And then maintain that optimum heterosis by doing that kind of approach, a whole systems type of thing that gives us more opportunities maybe as we carve it out. And, you know, just as an aside, that's the way I try to take some lessons. We had the gentleman from the dairy industry talking to us earlier, and I like that concept. And we try to take some ideas from crop production, you know, the heterosis in hybrid seeds at one point were considered the savior of the world, right? And we don't use that as effectively as row crop production, as swine production and poultry production do. They make an art out of that. And I think we've got some opportunity to take some of those lessons that would be applied totally differently to kind of a more extensive system that we have. We're not as as linear as they are, but I think we can still take some of those lessons and get to this. You know, making a good cow out of a good heifer means getting her bred early the first time, getting her to breed back the second time. And pregnancy, to me, is the most important phenotypic trait to select for in heifers. And there's different ways to go about that, different ways to manage that in different systems. But all of it really comes down to the endocrinology that controls that first puberty and then how long before they start cycling back after they have their next calf. That's really what dictates on the ground level how the longevity of a cow. But there's so many things that we can do to help that or hinder that from the time they're weaned or even back to in utero and making those mating decisions all the way to getting bred back the second time. So kind of a fast way to go through that, but just wanted to try to wrap it up and be cognizant of the other speakers. But Lawton, do we have any time for some questions to follow that?
Yeah.